And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Eagles 15, Slaughter of Eagles, by William W. Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by David Coyne, Colleen Delaney, Tim Getman, Michael Glenn, Stephen Carpenter, Kate Foster, Joe Brack, Yasmin Toizon, Andy Clements, Eric Messner, Michael Replogle, Christopher Graybill, Tony Nam, Thomas Penny, Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Jeff Allen, Lily Beacon, James Lewis, James Konachek, Johan Detweiler, Karen Novak, Julianne Elliott, Christopher Sheeran, Ted Stoddard, Scott McCormick, Michael John Casey, Kimberly Gilbert, Laura Reichert, and Sonny Lasky.
Statue of Jamie Ian McAllister to be dedicated July 4th. The noted artist and sculptor Frederick Remington has for some time now been busy creating a life-size bronze statue of our founder, the late Colonel James Ian McAllister. The work was commissioned by the McAllister City Council and will be paid for by the City of McAllister and the State of Colorado. Governor Grant will be present for the dedication and will be the featured speaker. Colonel McAllister's children will be guests for the occasion and will occupy positions of honor upon the stage with the governor. It is not mere coincidence that the dedication is to be held on the 4th of July, for Colonel Jamie Ian McAllister embodied all that was noble about our country and our country's founders. Festivities for the event are now being planned.
Falcon McAllister read the article in the McAllister Eagle as he waited for his lunch to be served at the City Pig restaurant. The youngest son of the legendary Jamie Ian McAllister, Falcon was the biggest of all his siblings. He had his father's size, with wide shoulders, full chest, and powerful arms. And, of all his siblings, he had come the closest to matching his father in reputation, too. However, he did have two siblings, the twins Andrew and Rosanna, who in their own field were just about as well known. Andrew and Rosanna McAllister were, according to a recent article in the New York Times, the toast of New York theater. They had performed for every president from U.S. Grant to Chester Arthur, missing only James Garfield because assassination had limited his term to 7 months. They had also performed for the Queen of England and the King of Sweden, but they would not be present for the dedication of their father's statue. That very morning, Falcon had received a letter from Andrew and Rosanna explaining they would be unable to attend because they'd be closing one play on the 4th and would be opening another play 1 week later. Falcon had visited them in New York a few times before. He'd gotten a glimpse of their world, and though he wished they could come for the dedication, he understood why they couldn't. He was going to have to explain it to his other siblings, though, and he knew they would not be quite as understanding.
Hello, Falcon. It's good to see you.
Falcon looked up from his paper and saw the Reverend and Mrs. Powell. He stood.
Brother Charles, Sister Claudia, how good to see you.
It's a wonderful thing, isn't it? I mean, our town getting a statue of your father?
Yeah. When I learned what the city council had in mind, I have to admit, I was very pleased.
I have been asked to give the invocation. I told them I'm retired now. They would be better off asking young Reverend Pirate.
I asked that you give the convocation.
I thought perhaps you did. Though I'm sure there are others who are eminently more qualified.
Nonsense. Who better than you? You and my father were very close friends, and like my father, you were one of the founders of the valley.
I confess, Falcon, that I am both honored and pleased to have been asked to do the invocation. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Right. Won't you join me for lunch?
Well, Claudia?
We would be pleased to join you.
Wonderful. Please, sit down. Tell me what's going on in your life.
We are about to be great-grandparents any day now.
Think of it, Falcon. That makes 4 generations of Powells. What have we loosed on this unsuspecting world?
As Falcon and the Reverend and Mrs. Powell enjoyed their lunch, 750 miles east, at a small ranch in Jackson County, Missouri, young Christine Doomy had come out to the barn to summon her brother, Donnie, to lunch.
Hey, Christine, look at me! I'm going to swing from this loft over to the other one!
Donnie, don't you do that. You'll fall.
Ignoring his older sister's concern, Donnie grabbed hold of a hanging rope, then took several running steps before leaping off into space. The rope carried him across, and he landed on a pile of loose hay.
Ha! You thought I couldn't do it.
You're lucky you didn't break your neck.
Nah, you're always such a fraidy cat.
Mama said we need to get ready for dinner.
Donnie was 11, toe-headed and freckle-faced. At 13, Christine was beginning to look more like a young woman than a little girl.
I'll be right down.
Donnie walked over to the edge of the loft and looked out the big window toward the main house. He saw 3 horses tied up at the hitching post. He grabbed onto another rope, then slid easily down to the ground.
Hey, Christine, who's here?
What do you mean, who's here?
There are 3 strange horses tied up at the hitching rail.
I don't know. There was nobody here when I came out to get you. Maybe it's somebody wanting to buy some livestock. Come on.
We ain't got nothing to sell right now. Papa just sold off all the pigs. Got good money for them, too.
Donnie and Christine walked into the house. As soon as they got inside, they sensed something was wrong. 3 men were standing in the kitchen, while Donnie's mother and father were sitting in chairs against the wall. Donnie's mother had cooked pork chops for dinner, and one of the men was holding a pork chop in his hand now. He had just taken a bite of it, and a bit of it was hanging from his mustache. He was by far the biggest of the 3. The other 2 men were not much taller than Donnie.
Mama? Papa? What's going on?
Children, these gentlemen are Egan Drum and Cleet and Luke Mueller.
Oh, the Mueller brothers.
One of the 2 small men smiled at Donnie, though the smile did nothing to ease the tension in the room.
So you've heard of us, have you?
I've heard you rob banks and trains.
See that, Luke? We're famous.
Shut up, Cleet, you damn fool.
Egan Drum bit the last of the meat from the pork chop bone, then tossed the bone onto the floor.
Where at's the money?
What money?
Tell him what money, Luke.
Luke Mueller drew and fired his pistol at Lillian Doomy, hitting Lillian in her left leg. Blood oozed down over her foot, and she doubled forward to grab the wound.
Mama!
You son of a bitch!
I know you got a lot of money from selling your hogs yesterday, so don't be playing dumb with me. I'm gonna ask you one more time. Where is the money at? If you don't answer, I'll put a bullet in her other leg.
No, please. I'll tell you. Just don't hurt her anymore. The money's over there, in that vase. Under the flowers.
Drum nodded to Cleet Mueller, and he walked over to the vase, picked it up, and then threw it on the floor. In the shards of broken glass was a packet of bills, tied together with a string into 1 neat bundle.
Ha! Here it is!
How much is there?
1, 2, 3, 6, $600!
Hell yes! That's a pretty good haul. $200 apiece.
That's an entire year's work. If you take that, how'll I feed my family?
No, you won't have to worry about feeding them. Willie boys.
Nope.
No!
Sometime later, Chris Doomy came too.
What? Why? Am I on the floor. Oh, God.
He struggled to raise his head. Looking around, he saw his wife and both his children lying lifeless on the floor with him. There was blood everywhere. Dipping his finger into his family's spilled lifeline, he began to write something on the kitchen floor.
We was killed by Drum and Mueller.
He never finished. Egan Drum and the Muellers rode hard away from the Doomy Ranch for a little better than an hour before slowing down.
What do you boys say the next town we come to, we get us a couple drinks and maybe a woman?
Hey, woman, Cleet. Would you want us to all share the same woman?
Well, why the hell not? It'll be cheaper if we share one.
I ain't sharing a woman with nobody. What about you, Egan?
Well, I ain't sharing, because I ain't going into town.
Why not? We're far enough away. There ain't likely to be nobody around here to know nothing about what we just done. Fact is, I doubt there's anyone here about who's ever even heard of the Doomies.
That ain't it.
Then what is it?
I aim to go out on my own now.
Damn, Egan. You don't like us no more?
Goddamn, Cleet, no, it ain't that. It's just... Well, think about it. We just killed four people back there, and what'd we get for it? $200 apiece. $200, that's all.
$200 ain't nothing to sneeze at. Hell, if you was riding around for 20 and fine, it'd take you damn near a year to earn that much money.
I know. That's why I don't ride for 20 and found. But I think I want to go out on my own anyway. No hard feelings.
Yeah. Okay, I guess. No hard feelings.
Luke and Cleet turned their horses in the direction of the small town. Drum continued to ride on in the same direction they'd been going.
Where you reckon he's a-going?
Ah, who the hell knows? Gotta burn his saddle over something. We don't need him. Find someone else to work with next time we do a job. And when we do, it'd be a lot bigger than this one we just pulled.
Yeah, right. We don't need him no more, no how.
One month later, in Brownville, Colorado, Cleet Mueller was in the Gold Dig Saloon. Cleet was talking with one of the bar girls. Talking was just about all he could do because he had already spent nearly all of the money he had gotten from the Doomies. Luke Mueller was playing cards with three others. Ollie Terrell was shuffling the cards. He had only three fingers on his left hand. Bo Caldwell had a patch over his right eye, though a few minutes earlier he had removed the patch to scratch his eyebrow, and Luke saw that there was no eye there at all, just a puff of scar tissue. The third man was named Clarence Poole. The Muellers had never met Terrell or Caldwell, but they knew Poole. They had served a little time with him in the Missouri State Penitentiary in Jefferson City.
What the hell are you dealing for, Terrell? Hell, you can't even hold the cards proper.
What do you care whether or not I can hold them proper, Caldwell? Hell, you've got only one eye, so you can't see them anyway.
I like it when he deals with no more fingers than he's got on that hand. It just means he can't deal off the bottom of the deck.
Well, you can tell he ain't doing that. The only one of us winning is Luke Mueller. If I don't win something soon, I'm going to have to get me a job somewhere.
I got a job for you.
What kind of job? I tell you the truth, I don't want to be shoveling no shit out of a stall or nothing like that.
Believe me, it's nothing like that. It's quick, easy, there's a lot of money in it.
Shit.
Where are you going to find something that's quick, easy, and has a lot of money? Unless you're planning on robbing a bank.
Luke looked at Terrell, but made no comment.
What?
I'll be damn, that's it, ain't it? You planning on robbing a bank, ain't you?
Well, why don't you just go out the street and shout it?
Bull, you know this fella? Me and Terrell don't. Is he serious? Mueller, you recruiting people to ride with you?
I might be, Pooh. If I can find a few good men I can depend on.
Hell, you know you can depend on me. I'm in.
What?
You really are serious, ain't you, Mueller?
Are you in or out?
I'm in. Hell yes.
Me too.
What about Egan Drum?
What about him?
Don't he ride with you and Cleet? Where's he at?
I don't have no idea where he is.
So what you're saying is that he ain't gonna be a part of this?
Yeah, Pooh. That's what I'm saying.
Good. I never liked that son of a bitch anyway. Don't know why you and Cleet ever took to running with him.
When do we hold up this here bank?
Luke fixed a stare at Terrell. Then he looked back at Pooh.
This dumb bastard not know when to keep his mouth shut?
Who are you calling a dumb bastard?
I'm calling you a dumb bastard.
Caldwell reached over to put his hand on Terrell's shoulder.
Ollie, don't get carried away here. You know damn well you don't want to get into a pissing contest with Luke Mueller.
Suddenly, Terrell realized how close he was getting to making a very foolish mistake. He forced a smile.
Come to think of it, I guess I can be a dumb bastard from time to time.
Uh-huh. Well, to answer your question, it'll be tomorrow over in a place called McAllister.
The Reverend Charles Powell and his wife Claudia were standing outside the bank when the teller, Clyde Barnes, opened the door.
Good morning, Brother Powell. Mrs. Powell, come in. You're here awfully early today. You must have some important business to attend to.
More pleasure than business. We're going to Denver to see our new great-granddaughter, and I thought we might need a little walking around money.
Well, you aren't going to miss the dedication of Colonel McAllister's statue, are you?
Oh, goodness, no. I wouldn't miss that for the world. But that's some time away yet. We'll be back in plenty of time for that.
Oh, I didn't think you'd want to miss it. Say, I heard you're giving the invocation.
I will be giving it, and mighty proud to do so.
Well, come on up to the window, Reverend, and I'll give you your money. Have you drawn the draft yet?
Yes, I have it right here.
The Reverend Powell pulled the draft from his pocket.
Well then, we'll have you out of here in no time.
Suddenly, the front door burst open and five men came charging into the bank. All five had their guns drawn, and they were so sure of themselves that none of them were wearing masks. One of them had only one eye, and Mrs. Powell had to turn her head away in revulsion rather than look directly at him.
Everybody get your hands up! This is a bank robbery! Teller, get behind the cage and give us all the money you got!
Barnes stepped around behind the counter, opened his drawer, and pulled out a couple $100s. He handed it through the window to the robbers.
What is this? You telling me this is all the money you got in this bank?
There is more money in the safe, but it's locked and I don't have the combination. Mr. Dempster only lets me have what he thinks I'll need during the day.
The little man who spoke turned his pistol on Claudia Powell.
Now you open that damn safe or somebody else dies.
What have you done?
Even though he was unarmed, Reverend Powell started toward the shooter. The good Reverend went down, collapsing on the floor next to his wife. A young woman suddenly came into the bank, and the little man pointed his pistol toward her.
No, no, please don't shoot her. That's my wife. I'll get the money for you.
So, you suddenly remembered the combination to the safe, have you?
Yes, yes, Mr. Mueller, please, no more shooting.
Luke, the son of a bitch knows us.
What can I tell you, Cleet? When you get as good at something as we are, people learn your name.
Well, that ain't good, is it?
That ain't all bad. If the law in this one-horse town knows that it was the Mueller brothers who held up the bank, they'd be too scared to come after us.
Barnes returned from the safe carrying a sack.
Yeah, this is it. This is all the money the bank has.
Open the top. Let me look down inside.
Barnes opened the top, disclosing several bound packets of $20 bills.
Now, that's more like it.
Luke Mueller took the bag.
It's been a real pleasure doing business with you.
When Falcon McAllister rode into town just before noon, he knew something had happened. Nobody was pitching horseshoes outside Sykes Hardware's store. No one was playing checkers in front of Boots and Saddles. There were no clusters of women shoppers standing on the corners, laughing and talking. In fact, there was a pall hanging over the town that was palpable. Wondering what was going on, Falcon stopped in front of the sheriff's office and swung down from his horse.
Yeah.
He tied it off. Inside, the newly elected sheriff, Amos Cody, and two of his deputies were looking at a map they had spread out on a table.
Good morning, Amos.
Mr. McAllister, am I glad to see you?
I keep telling you, Amos, call me Falcon.
Yes, sir, I know you do, but it's just that I grew up hearing about your pa's exploits, then yours. Well, it just seems hard.
You're making me feel very old, Amos.
Falcon glanced out the window and saw a little cluster of people engaged in an intense conversation. The somber expressions on their faces reinforced his feeling that something bad had happened.
What's going on, Sheriff?
Well, the bank was robbed this morning.
Robbed?
And the Reverend Pyle and his wife was murdered.
Deputy Bates spoke. He was a lot older than the young sheriff and had been a deputy for many years.
What? Brother Charles and Sister Claudia have been killed?
Yeah. They were in the bank when it was robbed.
I don't understand. Why were they killed?
Who knows?
It was Luke and Cleet Mueller. From all I've heard about them two, they don't really need no reason. According to Clyde Barnes, the Powells were just standing there in the bank when the robbers came in, and next thing you know, Luke Mueller shot them. Then they got away clean as a whistle.
The Mueller brothers, you say?
Yeah, and three others.
Have you ever run across the Mueller brothers?
Nope.
I didn't reckon you had. Because if you had, both of them bastards would be dead by now.
And who were the other three, Sheriff?
We don't know. Barnes recognized the Muellers, but he had never seen any of the others.
Are you going after them?
By now, they have more than likely left the county. Even if I found them, I would have to work with the sheriff of that county. But you now, you hold a special deputy's commission from the governor, which gives you authority all over the state. I was hoping you might take a personal interest in this. Reverend Powell was a friend of yours, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a close friend. He did the funeral for my mother and my father, and he baptized nearly every one of my nieces and nephews. I guess I've known the Reverend and Mrs. Powell for just about all my life. They were among the earliest settlers of the valley, and they were good people.
He had already retired when I came here, but I knew him, of course, and from what I knew of him, he was a good person.
Did anyone see them leave? Do we know which way they were going?
Yeah, we had quite a few people who saw them ride out of town. The only thing we know for sure is they were heading east when they left here. Bates and I went out looking for them, but didn't see anything. I know you probably have other things to do, but I was hoping you'd take a look around for us, see what you could come up with.
Sheriff, they killed two people who were as close as family to me. I'd go after those men whether you asked me to or not. Oh, I'll find them.
Thank you.
The teller was the only witness?
Clyde Barnes was the only witness to the actual holdup, though several saw them riding out of town.
Then let's start with Barnes.
For the next half hour, Falcon gathered as much information as he could about the robbers.
Well, you know what the Muellers look like, don't you? I guess just about everyone knows what they look like. They're little, short, dried-up, evil-looking men. As for the others, one of them had only one eye. That's his left eye. There's nothing but a big old ugly mass of purple flesh where the right eye was. And another one had only three fingers on his left hand. I don't know as I saw anything particular about the third man. I mean, he was pretty ordinary, as men go.
What about their horses?
Well, I didn't see them. I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right. You've given me a good description of the man. It'll be very helpful.
At least half a dozen citizens had seen the bank robbers ride out of town at breakneck speed. They reported two were riding roans, one was riding a black horse, one a white horse, and one was riding a paint. Falcon had examined the ground where the horses had been tied up outside the bank and had seen something that made him smile. One of the horses had a tie bar shoe on his right forefoot. Now, riding out past the east end of town, Falcon looked around. He found that same tie bar.
They might as well have left behind a batch of arrow-shaped signs reading, "We went this way."
Somewhat farther into the trail, Falcon realized that the Mueller brothers were not going to make it as easy as he had first thought. They had been on the run for nearly all their adult life, so they knew how to confuse and disorient anyone who might be tracking them. They took great pains to cover their true trail, while leaving false trails for anyone to follow. To that end, they rode through streams and over hard rock, trying every trick in the book to throw off anyone who might be following them. But Falcon hung on doggedly. And since it was always the same five horses who broke the trail, he had a way of identifying each one of them, not just the one with the tie bar shoe. One of the horses had a slight turn-in of its right rear hoof. Two of the horses had noticeable nicks in their shoes, one on the left rear and the other on both rear shoes. Only one horse had no noticeable features, and that in itself became a way of identifying it. In addition, all the horses had grazed together for the last few days because their droppings were filled with the same kind of wild mountain meadow grass.
Whoever that fella is that's dogging us is still on our trail.
Luke twisted around in his saddle.
You sure?
Hell yes, I'm sure. We've got me a glimpse of him on the other side of that far ridge.
Well, that makes him a little more than a mile back.
Ain't there no way we can shake him?
You got any ideas we ain't tried? We done everything I can think of, and it ain't even slowed him down none.
Whoever the hell he is, I swear he could track a fish through water.
I'll tell you what we ought to do.
All right, brother, let me hear your idea.
We ought to just wait behind a couple rocks and shoot him as soon as he comes up on us.
If I thought for certain we'd get him, I'd be all for it. But we're not likely to get a clean shot at him out here.
The five men looked back, trying to get a glimpse of the man who was following them.
I got me an idea.
What's that?
Luke pointed to a narrow draw in front of him.
If we can get through that draw, he'll have to follow us through.
So?
Look at them rocks up on the top there, on the right-hand side. You see him?
I see him.
If we push those rocks down, it'll block the draw and he can't get through.
Hell, why don't we just wait until he gets into the draw, then push them rocks down on him?
Yeah, all right, we could try it. Come on, let's hurry through the draw. Yeah!
15 minutes later, Falcon reached the spot where the five men had halted. He could tell by the tracks that they had stopped there for a few minutes, and he could also tell that they had left the spot at a gallop.
Now, what would cause them out here in the middle of nowhere to suddenly break into a gallop?
Looking ahead, Falcon saw the trail led to a very narrow draw.
Hup!
Now!
Falcon jerked his horse to a stop. Glancing up, it looked to Falcon as if the entire wall was collapsing right on top of him. He was well clear of the draw by the time the rocks started piling up on the floor below. Turning back toward it, he watched the dust rise as the rocks closed up the passage.
We got him! There ain't no way he got out of that!
They all stared down into the draw. They saw nothing but a large pile of rocks on the floor below.
Who was it, do you reckon?
I don't have no idea, Poole. Probably some deputy or something. Whoever it was, don't make no never mind now, because he's deader than a damn doornail.
We got away clean as a whistle.
Yeah! Hey, what say we divide up our money now, and each one of us go on a different way?
Not yet.
What do you mean, not yet? Why not?
If they was one deputy coming after us, it's just as likely to be another one. Or maybe two or three more. We'd be better off all sticking together till we're sure.
The five outlaws headed in a straight line for the little town of Blackhawk. The sun went behind the clouds just before noon, and the clouds thickened and darkened.
Damn! Pretty soon it's gonna commence to rain in here like pouring piss out of boot. We're gonna be right in the middle of it.
Oh, what if it does rain? You ain't made of sugar. You ain't gonna melt.
You ain't made of sugar. I like that.
I ain't gonna melt, that's true. But it ain't gonna be none too comfortable being out here in it either.
I'll let the rain come. The more rain, the better.
What do you mean?
Think about it, Terrell. If anybody else is on our trail, why, this rain will wash out the tracks.
Yeah, that's right, ain't it? It would wash out all our tracks.
Hell, I say let the rain come.
But not yet.
What do you mean, not yet? You just said the rain would wash out all our tracks, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And it will. But if it just hold off for another half hour or so, we'll be to Blackhawk.
What the hell is this Blackhawk?
It's a town me and Cleek already scouted out. No railroad comes to us, there's no telegraph wires, and even if they have heard of us, there ain't likely no one there has ever seen us. We'll be safe inside, and the rain will wash away the tracks. We could hold up there for a while until they quit looking for us.
And spend some of our money?
Yeah, we could spend a little of our money there.
I ain't never been to Blackhawk. What's it like?
Well, Caldwell, it's got beer, whiskey, food, and women. What else you need to know about it?
Don't need to know nothing more about it at all, I don't reckon.
It took the better part of a quarter hour to reach the town after they first saw it, and they rode in slowly, sizing it up with wary eyes. It was a town with only one street. The unpainted wood of the few ramshackle buildings was turning gray and splitting. There was no railroad, but there was a stagecoach station with a schedule board announcing the arrival and departure of 4 stagecoaches per week. The first few drops of rain started to fall, and the few people out on the street ran to get inside before the rain started in earnest.
There's where we're headed.
Luke pointed to a saloon. Painted in red and outlined in gold on the false front of the saloon were the words Lucky Nugget. Luke reached for the little cloth bag that was tied to his saddle horn.
You taking the money in with you?
Shit, Terrell. You don't think I'm gonna leave it out here, do you?
I reckon not. This thing might be a little strange for you to be carrying all that money.
Oh, Christ almighty. Terrell, don't worry about it.
Almost as if on cue, the clouds opened up and the rain fell in torrents.
Ha! I'll just bet you that old Egan Drum is a-wishing he was with us now, after all the money we just stole. He got to thinking he could do better going on his own, so he left. But now here we are. We got us all this money and he ain't got nothing.
No, we don't know he ain't got nothing. We don't know nothing about him. Not even where he's at.
Yeah, but I'd be willing to bet he ain't got nothing.
Speaking of going out on our own, I think maybe we ought to divide up the money now and go our own way.
We'll divide the money when I say we divide it. Anyway, what are you worried about, Terrell? We got plenty of money to spend now, ain't we? Order whatever you want. We can afford it.
Yeah, we can afford it.
What about women? What if I'm wanting me a woman?
No, don't you worry none about getting yourself a woman. There's plenty of women around, and once we start spending the money, the women will be coming out of the woodwork.
Women coming out of the woodwork. I like that. I ain't never heard nothing like that before.
How about we start spending some of that money now? I'm hungry, and I got me a thirst worked up, too.
Barkeep! Bring us a couple bottles of whiskey, some glasses, and some food. Lots of food.
And some women. Let's get some women over here.
3 of the bar girls who had been wandering around the saloon, flitting from table to table like bees around flowers, answered the call. Though Luke Mueller was the smallest of the men, he turned all his attention to the biggest of the women.
Ain't that in there a little big for you, Luke?
As quick as a thought, a pistol appeared in Luke's hand, and he pointed it at Terrell.
You have something to say about what woman I pick?
Hey, you know I didn't mean nothing by that, Luke. That's just a funnin' you, is all.
Everyone watched the tableau. Then slowly, a smile spread across Luke's face. He put the pistol back in his holster.
I didn't mean nothing neither. I was just funning you, too. What's your name?
Patsy.
Tell me, Patsy, what do you charge for me and you to go upstairs?
$1 for 1 hour, $3 for the rest of the day.
Here's $5. I might want to stay longer than the rest of the day.
Smiling, Patsy took the money and stuck it inside the top of her dress between her very large breasts.
Oh, honey, we're gonna have us a real good time.
Luke reached under the table and picked up a cloth bag.
What's that, darling? Your laundry? Honey, for $5, I'll give you a damn good time, but I ain't gonna be doing no laundry.
Luke, you can leave your laundry here if you want.
That's all right. I'll take care of it. This way we all know where it is, won't we?
Come on. This way, darling.
Patsy led Luke away from the table, and the others in the saloon watched him as they went up the stairs.
Good God, I reckon. Looks like a mouse following an elephant.
From the moment he left McAllister, Falcon had been on the trail of a band of outlaws. Though the tracks were gone now, washed out by the steady downpour, before he lost them, they had been leading directly and inexorably toward Black Hawk. The cold, driving rain that had started up in the higher elevations and then moved down the slopes of the Front Range Mountains had turned the single street of Black Hawk into a rushing river. Falcon knew if he couldn't find his quarry in Black Hawk, he'd have to give it up. Was also reasonably certain that the men, confident they had gotten away cleanly after the rock slide, would be there somewhere, taking shelter from the rain. Shivering in the cold downpour, Falcon perused both sides of the street. There was a rooming house, a livery, a smithy, and a general store that had drugs, meat, and goods painted on its high false front. There was a hotel, a restaurant, and of course, the saloon. It was not exactly a bolt from the blue when he saw the horses he had been tracking through roads of black, white, and paint tied up outside the Lucky Nugget Saloon.
Well, boys, I'll just bet you thought you were home free. Looks like you're in for a little surprise. Yeah.
Stopping in front of the saloon, Falcon slid down from the saddle, then walked over to examine the right forefoot of each horse. He struck pay dirt on the third horse he checked. The paint had a tie bar shoe, the same shoe he'd been following for the last 2 days. Falcon used the edge of the wide, weathered boardwalk planks to scrape mud from his boots. He slipped out of his poncho and hung it on a nail sticking out of the front wall. Taking his hat off, he poured water from the top of the crown and put it back on his head. Finally, he eased his pistol from the holster and checked the loads, satisfying himself he was ready for any contingency. Squaring his shoulders, he pushed through the swinging batwing doors and stepped just far enough inside to be out of the rain. The inside of the saloon was a golden bubble of light. A dozen lanterns hung from a couple wagon wheel chandeliers. A large cloud of drifting tobacco smoke spread throughout the room, dimming the light and creating an artificial fog sufficient to becloud the view. The features of people standing no more than a few feet away looked as if they were being viewed through a film of gauze cloth. The wood-burning stove put off enough heat to remove the chill from the damp, dreary day, and the room was redolent with the smell of burning wood, tobacco, stale beer, and wet clothing. The saloon was crowded. After a brief perusal, Falcon's attention was drawn to a table in the far corner, where four men and two other bar girls were engaged in animated conversation. Falcon moved a little closer so he could get a clearer look at the men. He'd been looking for five men, but there were only four here. However, with one of them wearing an eye patch, another one with only three fingers on his left hand, and a third noticeably shorter than the other three, he was convinced that these were the men he had been following, the ones who had held up the bank in McAllister. Now, Falcon had never seen the Mueller brothers, but he was well aware of them. Not since Frank and Jesse James had one pair of brothers become so notorious. And not even the James brothers had a reputation for killing to match the Muellers. Luke Mueller, particularly, was known to be a deadly gunfighter. Deadly because he was both quick with a gun and willing to use it. The smallest one at the table was clearly the dominating figure among the four. Falcon was certain he was one of the Muellers, though which one he didn't know.
Tell you what, darling, why don't me and you go on up and join my brother and that big old gal he's with?
What? In the same room? No, sir, I couldn't do anything like that.
Well, don't get yourself all in a tither. I didn't mean join him in the same room. I just meant go upstairs like they did. We'll find our own room.
Oh, well, hell, that's more like it. I never thought you'd ask. I was beginning to think you didn't like me.
Oh, I like you, darling. I like you just fine. Now, how about getting a bottle to take up with us?
All right.
Never mind the bottle, miss. You won't be needing it. None of them will.
What? What do you mean I'll not be needing me a bottle of whiskey?
You won't be needing it because you'll either be going back to McAllister with me to stand trial for bank robbery and murder, or you'll be dead.
The little man stared incredulously at Falcon for a moment.
You're a funny man, mister. You give me a good laugh. So what makes you think we held up a bank in McAllister, huh? Where is McAllister, anyway? They ain't none of us ever even been there.
Oh, you've been there, all right. I know that because I trailed the five of you from there to here.
You trailed us? Oh, wait a minute. That was you?
It was me.
But I thought...
That you got me with a rock slide? Yeah, that was close, but not close enough.
Who the hell are you, anyway?
The name is Falcon McAllister.
Falcon McAllister? Damn, Cleet, you and your brother said taking that bank would be easy. Shit. Now we got Falcon McAllister after us.
Shut up, Terrell, you damn fool. Don't you realize you just confessed to murder in front of a dozen witnesses?
What the hell are you talking about? I didn't kill nobody. Your crazy brother Luke is the one who done the killing.
I told you to keep your mouth shut.
The bar girl standing near the table moved away quickly, while all the others in the saloon, sensing something was about to happen, moved back against the walls, opening up the center of the saloon.
You seem to put yourself in a bit of a pickle here, Mr. McAllister. There's only one of you, and there's four of us. Appears to me like you would have been a heap better off just staying out of this. I'm gonna enjoy this.
Take your guns out of your holsters and put them on the floor.
Oh, McAllister, I would call that bold talk for someone who's not only outnumbered 4-1, but who ain't even holding the pistol. I'll tell you right now, the only way my gun is coming out of my holster is when I pull it to kill you.
A grin appeared on Falcon's face then. It was cold, calculated, confident. A brilliant flash of lightning struck so close that it was concurrent with the explosive peal of thunder. Mueller jumped up, his gun in his hand.
Now, boys!
The other three came up. All four men went down with fatal gunshot wounds.
Good God, I seen it, but I ain't believing it. Are they dead?
They're all dead.
How do you know they're all dead?
Because I didn't have time not to kill them.
That came from the room with Patsy and the other fella.
What other fella?
He come in with these four.
Falcon bounded up the stairs. Kicked the door open and rushed into the room. Patsy was in bed, naked from the waist up. Behind her, the rain poured into a broken window.
Don't shoot me!
Where is he?
He jumped out the window right through the glass after we heard all the shooting downstairs.
Falcon crossed to the window and looked outside. One of the roans was no longer tied up out front. As he turned back to the whore, he saw her trying to hide something under the bed quilt.
I'll take that, miss.
It's nothing but laundry.
Really?
Falcon took the sack from her and opened it.
Well, I'll be. There's money in there. Who would have thought that?
Yeah, who would have thought it?
The young woman sat in the front of the Hansom cab, holding her baby under the blankets and against her body to protect it from the cold New York City night air of early spring. Though her part of the cab was partially enclosed, the driver sat outside the enclosure on a high seat above and behind her. Janelle Wellington was a strikingly pretty woman, with dark hair, deep blue eyes, high cheekbones, and a smooth olive complexion. Janelle spoke to the driver through the hole in the roof.
Please wait for me. I'll only be here for a few minutes.
Above her, the cabbie tied the reins off, pulled his scarf up around his neck all the way to his ears, stuck his hands into his pockets, and hunkered down into his heavy coat to wait for his fare. The young woman carried the baby to the front of the brownstone, then up one flight of stairs.
Janelle, what are you doing here? And out on a cold night like this with that baby?
Janelle stepped inside.
Sue, I need to leave the baby with you for a while.
Overnight?
For a while longer.
What's this about? What's going on?
You know what's going on. You know the disgrace I've brought to our family. I can't stay here anymore, and I can't take the baby where I'm going.
Janelle, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Where are you going?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not quite sure yet where I'm going. I guess I'll know when I get there.
No, don't do this. Don't do this to yourself. Don't do it to the family.
The family? After all I've done, do you really think I could do anything more to this family? I have disgraced myself. I've disgraced mother and father, and I've disgraced you, my own sister.
Don't be silly. You haven't disgraced me.
I haven't disgraced you. Even you realize that I've disgraced our parents.
I didn't mean that, and you know it. They were upset and disappointed, yes. But I think it was more over what happened to you than they were with you. They love you. We all love you, and I don't want to see you throw your life away like this.
Please just tell me you'll take care of the baby, at least for a while. I need some more time.
Of course. You know I'll take care of the baby. But what about mother and father? Do they know you're leaving?
No. And please say nothing to them until after I have left.
You don't know what you're asking of me.
I do know. Believe me, I do know. And I know I couldn't ask this of any other person in the world.
I will say nothing until after you have gone, on one condition.
What condition is that?
You must let us know where you are, and that you are safe.
I promise I will let you know.
No, not just me. You must let mother and father know as well. We must be assured that you are all right.
I will, I promise. Thank you for loving me, even after all this.
The two sisters embraced, and then the younger woman, kissing her baby on the forehead, handed him over to her older sister. Janelle hurried down the stairs, then outside, where she climbed into the cab. She didn't look back.
Grand Central Station, driver.
Jerry Kelly stared blankly at Luke Mueller.
Mister, if you think you're going to get someone to go up against Falcon McAllister for $1,000, you're crazy. I heard what he done against your brother and three other men.
Cleet and the others tried to take him face on. I ain't asking you to do nothing like that. I got it all planned out.
You got it all planned out, do you?
Let's hear this plan of yours.
We gonna ambush him. He'd be riding right through the middle of the street with no idea of anything about to happen. We'll all be hit out, and we'll shoot him down before he even knows we're there. How hard can that be?
You're talking about Falcon McAllister. It's damn hard.
Too hard for you to do it for your share of $1,000?
There's four of us here. You, me, Collins, and Tucker. You're talking $250?
No, you ain't getting it. It'll only be three of you sharing the money, so you each get $333 each. I'm the one gonna give the money, remember? I won't be taking none of it for myself. All I want is for that son of a bitch to be killed.
But there's gonna be four of us doing the shooting?
Four of us.
Right, Collins.
That's kind of funny when you think about it, ain't it?
Funny? How?
When your brother went up against McAllister, it was four of them trying to kill him. But McAllister not only killed your brother, killed all four of them. Four. Just like us.
I told you. This ain't gonna be like that. It ain't gonna be nothing at all like that. Cleet and the others tried to face him head on, and all four of them got themselves killed. We ain't gonna give him no chance at all. We'll have him killed before he even knows we're around anywhere.
I got a question.
What's that, Tucker?
How the hell are we gonna get him into a spot where we'll all be hiding out and he'll be in the open?
Oh, you don't need to be worrying nothing about that. You just leave that to me. I got that all set up.
It was a letter that brought Falcon McAllister to Idaho Springs. He had received it 2 days ago. Ostensibly from a fellow named Bill Jones, it had promised information as to the whereabouts of Luke Mueller in return for cash. He was to meet Jones in the only hotel in town. Falcon should have seen it coming. Normally, he was much more observant, more aware of his surroundings. But he had no reason to sense danger. Idaho Springs, Colorado wasn't too far from McAllister Valley and was almost like a second hometown to him. Suddenly, a bullet plunged into his horse's neck. A stream of blood gushed out as Falcon leaped from the saddle to avoid being fallen on by the horse. He saw a white puff of smoke drifting up from behind a sign that read J.C. Beals Hardware. Snaking his rifle from its saddle sheath and holding it low in one hand, Falcon darted out of the center of the road and then dived for cover behind the watering trough. A bullet plowed into the dirt just behind him, and another hit into the trough. Crawling on his belly, Falcon reached the end of the trough, then looked up toward the hardware store where he had seen the gun smoke. He sighted down the barrel of his rifle and waited. The shooter on the roof lifted his head above the false front, just far enough to take a look. Then he was dead, bullet in his brain. Falcon determined there were two more adversaries in the loft of the livery stable, and another one standing behind the corner of Murchison's gun and ammunition shop. He turned his attention toward the livery loft, but couldn't see anything through the opening because of the darkness inside. Falcon threw a shot toward the livery where he had seen the muzzle flash, then turned his attention to the corner of the gun and ammunition shop. He perused the alley opening next to the shop, but he saw nothing. Turning his head, he saw Tom Murchison standing just inside the window of his store, waving fiercely. Succeeding in getting Falcon's attention, he pointed toward a stack of salt blocks in front of McGill Feed and Seed. Looking in that direction, Falcon saw a shadow cast against the feed store wall. He watched that shadow move toward the edge of the stack of salt blocks. He aimed at the extreme corner of the stack of blocks.
Two down.
Falcon turned his attention now to the two men in the loft of the livery. Leaving his rifle on the ground and drawing his pistol, he leapt up and ran toward the door of the stable. He darted through the wide double door into the barn and moved underneath the loft so his adversaries above had no shot at him. Falcon heard the footfalls on the loft above. And looking up, he saw bits of straw fluttering down through the cracks between the boards. He followed the fallen straw, then raised his pistol. The man pitched over the edge of the loft and caught his foot in the rope and tackle used to lift bales of hay. Hanging down like a pendulum on a grandfather clock, he swung back and forth across the open front door. Suddenly, a horse charged through the barn toward the open door, a rider leaning over the horse's neck. Falcon saw the rider slap his hand to the side of his head. He watched as the rider continued on, sitting strong in his saddle. He figured he must not have hit him after all. Falcon left the barn. Walked to his injured horse.
Damn. I'm sorry.
He pointed his pistol at the horse's head.
I am so sorry.